And welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus on this Monday, April 14th. It's 1:07 in the afternoon. It's a little chilly out there with temperatures in the mid-40s, a few scattered showers across the area, even some snow, from about Thief River down south to just north of White Earth. So, yeah, April's still here. April's still trying to hang on. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki, along with our Ag Director, Bridget Riedel. And good Monday to you, Bridget. How was the weekend?
Dandy, it looks like there's about 3,500 serene here at my house. I heard Mandan got a report from them about a half inch. So it depends on where you were to what you got. Every little bit is nice. And we're just going to see what the rest of the week brings. But folks are still making their plans to go ahead with nice Easter weekend. I think there's some more planting that'll happen towards the tail end of the week as well. And we're just going to see what that looks like.
Yeah, it was a beneficial rain for some, although we really didn't see much here in the FM area, as you said, up towards up in your neck of the woods, anywhere between a third and a half inch. So that's good news. I mean, everybody needs it. They really need it out west. And the good news that we have is over the next couple of weeks, we are going to see our rain chances increase, according to the LRC model. And even our medium range models are picking up on this as well. So good news there. For the rest of today, though, we are looking at, a little bit of light scattered shower activity. Could even see a few embedded rumbles of thunder out to the west of the valley, but nothing really to worry about. And again, any showers will be light. Highs today pretty much where they're at right now in the mid-40s, with northwest winds on the breezy side, about 20 to 30. And for tonight, we'll see the skies clear after midnight, with dropping down to a low in the upper 20s. And Tuesday, light winds and more sunshine, with highs in the low 50s. The warmest day of the week looks to be Wednesday, with highs in the low to mid-60s. It will be breezy, though, with south winds increasing at 15 to 30. And then another storm system comes our way on Thursday, bringing us scattered showers throughout the area, with highs in the upper 50s. And then we cool right back down for Friday, back into the upper 40s. But it does look pretty decent if you have any travel plans coming up for Easter weekend across the area. Now, there will be a storm moving in from the south late Sunday, but most of Easter should be dry. But Sunday night and into Monday, we could see a better chance for some rain coming in to at least the eastern third of the state and into Minnesota. I think central and western parts of the state get left out on the majority of that storm. But there's another couple of them down the pike, so that's good news. As I said, we're getting into the wet part of the LRC cycle. And boy, I'll tell you, many parts of the state could use it. You know, unfortunately, they had the wildfire burn out in around McCleskey, and it's just, Sheridan County area, very dry. The whole central western part of the state, just abnormally dry, to even severe drought out in the far west. So especially on these windy days with lack of precip, just common sense, I guess, is the best thing you could do.
That is what we're looking for from a lot of folks right now. And if you wanted to follow along with what those things look like, first of all, the U.S. Drought Monitor is always a good place to stop and check. If we think about what's happening in our area, if you look down to also the southwest part of South Dakota, the panhandle of Nebraska into Wyoming, severe drought in that neighborhood. Also, there's a couple in spots in Montana. And then really the southwest United States, starting in about south central Texas and moving its way all the way into the tip of Nevada through the southern half of Arizona, looks really at a severe drought situation. Then additionally, you can overlay that with a wildfire map. And I was able to find this one as well. It covers fire, weather, and avalanches. So be sure to look for the avalanches in your neighborhood. And I say that tongue in cheek, but wildfires are nothing for us to snicker at, especially because we have so much dry plant material on the top of no-till fields. Ditches haven't greened up yet, pastures as well. And so folks have hay sitting around their farms because they did some feeding over the winter, but we probably have a fair amount of hay crop and straw bales left from last year. Those could just essentially be tinder for what could happen. And you mentioned rumbles of thunder. We can only hope that that doesn't lead to any sort of lightning storms at this point. Wildfires do show up, though, scattered across Montana. We have just maybe some past fires that have been contained around North Dakota. And then again, as we start to look into that American Southwest, we're going to see a lot more there. So It's nice to refresh this, see where active fires are, and it breaks it down whether they're sub 100 acres, 100 to 1,000, or larger than 1,000, and you can see whether they're contained or not. So helpful to have. Again, that's the wildfire map at fireandweatheravalanche.org. And then also don't forget the U.S. Drought Monitor app. Important things to have on your phone if you are following these weather situations.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. And like I said, hopefully here within the next 2.5 weeks, we can alleviate at least some of the drought conditions, at least kind of contain them and maybe see some improvement on that. So fingers crossed. Again, I was talking with Gary the other day, and he's highly confident that a lot of the drought conditions, especially through the Corn Belt, they're starting to shrink right now, and that will continue to be the case through the rest of spring and into early summer. So that's good for the Corn Belt. He's not so confident about areas of the western part of the Dakotas down into western Nebraska, where that's where the drought conditions are at their worst. Now, again, they'll improve a little bit, but to the point where it's really going to make a big difference, probably not the way it looks right now. So whatever rain we get here over the next 2.5 weeks, let's hope that does help and at least puts a small dent in the drought to help our ag community out for sure. Because, yeah, it's like you said, Bridget, it's just been way too dry.
I'm not classifying this as a drought yet. This is nothing compared to what drought conditions can really look
right.
like. I mean, is this not great? It's not great. But we also saw last year, as things dried out later half of the summer, we saw some pretty excellent corn yields in a number of places. You know, I remember talking with Teresa Gilley in Northwest Minnesota, and she said she'd taken a little bit more rainfall for her soybeans. But we had a number of corn producers who said, I don't know where that yield came from, but I'm glad I got it. So we're soon to see what that looks like, particularly with planting intentions right now, having a lot more focus in corn than we are really in soybeans. And you know, even in areas like central to western South Dakota, rather than soybeans, there'll be a number of sunflower fields that get planted, which is a little bit remarkable considering that that was a year ago. A lot of folks were swearing off, I'm not raising sunflowers again, whether it's due to profitability or pest, but sometimes plans have to change. So we'll see what those continue to look like as well.
Right. And speaking about soybeans, Bridget, I was listening to this podcast on how are the tariffs, at least, or do we even know yet, how are the tariffs associated with China? I keep hearing that they are really going to affect parts of the ag community, especially soybeans. Is that true, or is that just a rumor?
A majority of our soybeans do get exported to China. There's a couple of things that are going to happen there. One, we don't entirely know the effects of it. You know, I believe I saw a trader this morning who's a past guest of ours, Tommy Grisafi, say things opened up nicely and then Trump started talking and then there were some big dips in the market. So we'll see how we recover throughout the day from those things, because sometimes it just happens, right?
Right.
Where are we going to stand in soybeans? It's too soon to tell. Overall, we know that right now nobody's thrilled with what we see as a down export market. Because what that does is if they're not buying from us, they're going to establish relationships and buy more from their South American counterparts. Interestingly enough, though, China is really working to advance what they're calling a high-protein corn. They want to bring this to development so that they can overall reduce their dependence on soybean imports, whether it's from us or anybody else. So one of their ag universities has engineered corn varieties containing 10% protein plus, 2 percentage points higher than our conventional strains right now. So each percent protein higher increase would decrease soybeans or China's soybean dependence by about 8 million tons annually. The reason they're getting soybeans is so that they can go ahead and increase their pork production, because China would like to be pretty self-sufficient. Well, if they can circumvent that with corn, granted you've got some ration things there you got to talk through with livestock producers, but that's what they're trying to do, is to increase what they're doing with corn so that they could buy less soybeans on the global market, which makes them a little more protected instead of having to worry about price swings, that type of thing. So we'll see where that end or that winds up going. When all of this is just in the developmental stage, that doesn't mean that they're going to be able to bring something to fruition for a couple more years, but that's their plan. And again, they're going to look for a healthy animal feed. They also want to be able to use it to enhance immunity, because they wouldn't be bringing in something that could potentially be disease bearing. And then that also improves their quality of meat. And remember, China is the largest pork consuming country in the nation. In the globe.
Right, and that begs to ask the question of why aren't we trying something like that? Or are we? In regards to we'll call it super corn.
Oh, I think there's more work being done than you might anticipate, but there's a number of things that aren't released until they're closer to released in the marketplace. Unless it's being done by a public research university, if it's being done privately by a publicly traded company, they're not going to release that information very early.
Gotcha. Okay. Makes sense. Makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So we have a guest joining us today, and that will be Chandra Zeman Belinsky. Or Belinsky Zeman, excuse me. And Chandra is joining us from Bismarck. She's with North Dakota State University Extension Consumer Sciences. And she and I talked about this just briefly via email. In the last few months, the hate over seed oils, and when I say seed oils, we're talking soybeans, canola, and others, has really grown. And it kind of took me by surprise. And maybe that's because I'm not a big believer in, I read this on the internet. I try to find information other places as well. Not that people don't. I mean, everybody gets their information in a variety of ways. But Chandra and I thought it would be great to talk through what we know, not just speculation, but what we know when it comes to seed oil. So she's going to join us next to do that. Stay tuned for the market update from American Ag Network, and we'll be back. Welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. Thanks for being here. And good news, we now have our YouTube stream up and running. For those who are watching, sometimes there's delays in those technological advancements, but now YouTube is up and running as well as Facebook. You can find us there under WDAY, Weather and Ag in Focus, also Acres TV. And you can call us today on the JLA phone line, 701-293-9000. Happy to take your calls as we have our discussion today with our guest. And that is Chandra, I have to get them in the right order, Belinsky Zeman. I did it wrong earlier, Chandra. Sorry about that.
No, no problem. That's a mouthful. Yes.
It's okay. It's okay. But I didn't look at my sheet fast enough. So, all right. Let's visit just a little bit. You are with Consumer Education Sciences, et cetera, over in the Bismarck-Mandan area. All right. You and I had the conversation about seed oils. Were you surprised, too, where all of a sudden people were just raging a fit over soybeans and canola oil and so forth?
Yes. This is one that is perplexing for many scientists. I mean, even just in general consumers who aren't scientists. It's when you do talk to people who have the background of understanding in this, they are even perplexed. So I'd love to make sure we get everybody on the same page.
Please.
I'll share with you both sides.
Okay. That's what I like. We're not just going to argue for or against something. Let's talk about both sides of it. So do you have a little bit of history or background, or maybe the two of us can fill in the gap? It's not like using soybean oil or canola oil is new to our marketplaces. So maybe start with a little bit of background.
Right. I know it. I guess I didn't look up the number of, we have two types of seed or two types of oils that we consume as humans. Mm-hmm. We put them in the category seed oils. And I think there's 7 or 8 seed oils that have all been around a while. Grape seed, canola is a big one, and it's a fantastic oil to cook with, soybean oil. And then on the flip side, we have fruit oils, like olive oil or avocado oil. So kind of the two. And just so everybody knows, my background is in food science. I actually did my master's thesis on soybeans. And it happened to be a little bit more on the side of pesticides, but I know a fair amount about soybeans just because I was immersed in it. Yeah.
Okay. So also under that, we have soybeans, canola. We probably put flaxseed in the seed oils as well, which is not as common but can be used. And really, our concern here is about cooking, right? These oils are used in so many different ways. And part of the reason that people were looking to use these oils was a healthy alternative to what they felt was already existing as far as animal fats or anything like that. Now, personally speaking, I think there's a place for all of these things. It just matters that we do them in moderation. So, Where would you like to start? What are the first things we should tackle?
I'm happy to drive this. Yeah, let's drive it.
Okay, good.
Well, I know. Good. So first, I just want to do a baseline qualification statement that I am to somebody who has to make choices for little ones in our home. We have three little ones. I'm a mom. I'm very concerned about making sure that I know the most out of, you know, about making choices at the store that I possibly can. So I think what's happened, I mean, this is just me trying to respond to just concerns in general in the food and nutrition world. So remember, I'm a food scientist, not a dietitian, but I do partner with them. I try to stay out of the dietetics realm and how this affects your body, but there's a little bit of overlap when we're talking. And so just qualifying that, you know, I think my opinion is in the 70s and 80s, we did come up with some products in the market that we are finding now after a generation and a half later or two, that some of those choices weren't the best. An example is creating trans fat as opposed to saturated fat. So when we're talking about oils, the dietitians still tell us, the American Heart Association is who we often reference with extension education, that if the fat is in liquid form at room temperature, those are the best ways to consume fat. So seed oils are all, you know, oils at room temperature. And so baseline, it is going to have less bad cholesterol in it to, you know, clog our arteries. This is what we want to stay away from. So when we're now saying, okay, oils have been good forever, what's going on? That's actually the response to this hubbub. So, without getting into the specific type of oil, because in general, if it's an oil form, the dietitians tell us it's great. We do talk a little bit about smoke point, but I'm just going to give you a little bit of what I think I'm hearing that might be a concern. So we can sort of debunk it. How does that sound?
That sounds really great.
Thank you. If we don't cover something, please, I invite your calls in.
So, let's get rolling on some of those. I'd love to hear what you've got, Shonda.
Right. I mean, the first one that comes to mind is the way that the oil is processed. So fruit oils, by nature, have a higher percent oil. So the olive itself is very high in, you know, in lipid concentration. And so olive oil, as well as avocado oil, I'm even thinking a little bit coconut oil, they are pressed. It's literally a press process to in order to extract the oil. And the earlier the press, the more, you know, virgin it's called. Extra virgin is the very first press. And some argue that there might be some, you know, positive phytonutrients in there in that first press. And on the flip side with seed oils can be pressed, but it is much harder to extract the full amount of oil. And so when we're talking about waste, you know, which is a subject right now that is a huge priority for USDA, decreasing food waste, when it comes to pressing these oils out of the seed oils, it certainly can happen, but at a very much lower percentage. And so what we figured out is to be able to extract it by using a solvent. So versus press, it's an extraction. And this seems to get folks in a little bit of a, how does this happen and what is the process? So, yeah, so there is a solvent most commonly called hexane that is used. And hexane on its own, if it's inhaled or consumed at larger amounts, it's, you know, it's a six carbon chain. It is toxic to humans, but we are not consuming this. And so here's the thing that I like about the using hexane in the extraction process. So what it does is it pulls it. Actually, there's a positive here. I want to look at my notes to make sure I'm saying it right. But when we go to extract the oil, that is the whole point of our, you know, process, we actually can bring along some phospholipids, some chlorophyll, some things that are good. And that hexane brings all of that along, and then it's further processed. But so the companies that produce seed oils, actually, when they do use hexane, it's fairly expensive. And they want to, the companies actually have an innate reason to recover all of that hexane. And so usually about 99% is recovered. Very, very minute amounts might, because it has a very low boiling point, so it might volatilize out, becoming a gas in the environment. But there are programs around the safety of making sure that it's recovered. And because it's expensive, the companies want to recover as much as possible so that they can recycle and reuse it. So that's the novelty. There is an innate drive for the companies to make sure that they recover it. And in the chemistry.
So hold on right there, Shonda. Yeah. Just one. Okay. We got a quick touch on news. When we come back, I want you to continue. I want you to continue answering those types of questions for us, because I really appreciate it. This is a great technology-driven discussion. For those of you who want to make sure your technology runs smoothly, don't forget to get a hold of Chris Sherman over at techsupportfarm.com, because he will help you do that with your own IT, your work on farm, in between the tractors and the servers in your office, etc. So we'll be right back after the news. And thanks for joining us here today on Weather and Ag in Focus. Also, we are getting ready for our Here We Grow project this year. We're raising 20 acres of wheat. We'll be doing that in northwestern, north central, perhaps Cass County is what you could call it. And thank you to ND Estate Services as well as Thor Buildings for being a part of our project this year. If you are looking to make some transition plans happen, you're definitely going to want to talk to Mark Wagner over at ND Estate Services. We'll have him and some of his very best advice on air with Dean and I coming up in May to help you get started in that process. And then, of course, Thor Buildings. If you are looking at making any changes in your farm buildings, in your backyard, or at the lake, you're going to want to talk to Thor Buildings as well. Meanwhile, we're talking with our guest today, and that is Shonda Belinsky-Zeman. She's with North Dakota State University Extension Consumer Sciences, and we are talking about seed oils. And I really appreciate you breaking down the oil processed, or where we're pressing them, versus how we get the seed oil. So what's our next step in the discussion, Shonda?
Yeah, I just want to close out, because we were talking about extraction with a type of solvent that we think might scare people. I don't even know if you realize that that is what's happening. But somebody out there tried to scare everybody. And, you know, when it comes to hexane, I do just want to say that the U.S. in the EPA. So they oversee it, and they have five different classifications by letter of the most harmful, toxic, you know, carcinogenic, causes cancer chemicals. And A is the most dangerous, most likely cause of carcinogenic response. And E is none at all. And hexane is in D. It's in D because there is no evidence, or evidence shows that there is not a connection with the amount that is consumed, particularly when you extract pertaining to seed oils. So I just want to close that out. And then the other argument that I've heard is that it is high in omega-6 free fatty acids, FFAs. And that is a lot of chemistry too. So if you know what I'm talking about, right? When have you seen, Bridget, on you know, when you take supplements or vitamins or things to stay healthy, have you seen omega-3s, omega-6s, omega-9s? I'm guessing.
Yeah, absolutely. And we talk about omega-3s even when you look at beef and other healthy fats, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly. And so there was, and I just presented on this last Wednesday with a dietitian, and then I heard Dr. Bellery. She's from Ohio State. She's a PhD dietitian, licensed, certified dietitian. And so out of Ohio, she first heard this, and she is fortunate enough to be able to run a lab. And so what the rumor, or as she calls it, concept is, so a concept is not factual, but there's something out there that makes it interesting, and we have to make sure that we're showing that there's evidence to support it. In this case, she wanted to really do the work for herself, and it was very recent, and she reported out her results in February, and so I was in the audience listening. And so the concern might be, or was, as a concept, not a fact, that omega-6 at higher amounts when consumed, it may be a 6-to-1 ratio, more omega-6 than omega-3s, because you need both. Your body needs both. We're still doing research as to understanding exactly how much, according to her. So does omega-6 cause inflammation? Does it cause your body to respond in a way that is, you know, anytime you have an irritant, you have inflammation, and chronic inflammation, long-term inflammation can result in disease. It's like cardiovascular disease. But she just didn't buy it with this. Okay. Omega-6 is causing inflammation. So she actually ran her own study. She had a hard time finding funding, but she wanted to debunk this a little bit. And so she wasn't able to do a double-blind study, which means, okay, both the researchers and the participants don't know what they're getting. They were able to do a blind study so that the participants didn't know what they were getting. Were they getting the omega-6? And what they did was they gave them a teaspoonful of omega-6 oil. So it's linoleic is the name of it, linoleic oil. Linolenic is omega-3. But they gave women who had at least a obese or overweight BMI, 31 BMI. So these gals had diabetes. So these females consumed an extra teaspoon of omega-6s a day. And they actually found that their blood sugar was more regulated. So they were looking at glycemia, and they actually responded the very opposite. There was no additional inflammation. And I have to look at exactly how she studied that, but she gave very technical results that you've got to sift through. And her overall message was, it is the absolute very opposite when it comes to what seed oils contribute to inflammation pertaining to omega-6s. She's finding, and all of the dietitians that I've worked with on this, at least probably a half dozen, are saying, yeah, omega-6s are essential. So certainly within moderation. I've heard you say that before, Bridget. Mm-hmm.
That's what I was just going to ask you about, Chandra, is, okay, this really circles back to us reminding ourselves, everything in moderation. I mean, we shouldn't be consuming everything, because without soybean oil, we don't have things like salad dressings. Okay. And for everybody at the salad bar buffet, you're going to miss out on that unless you're just going to have vinaigrettes. Okay. That's fine, but that might not be the choice you want. Personally, I really like canola oil as a cooking oil, but I don't use it in every single meal. I break that up with butter and other things. So no matter which way we circle around, right, we just have to do things in moderation.
Yeah, 100%. And in the case of, I mean, remember, this is oil that we're talking about. So you're already starting out in a better place, because what happens when your body breaks down and goes through metabolism, you know, you're digesting your food. The more unsaturated, okay, this is chemistry again, a little bit here. The more unsaturated the fat, the better. So unsaturated means that it's liquid. If it's saturated, it's in more of a block solid form, like butter or some of your
Crisco,
you know, palm oils. Yep, Crisco. And so,
I mean, I know Dean just laughed, but seriously,
that's what my parents
grandma
used.
Cooked with Crisco.
All they cooked with.
Thanks for saying that, because what's happened is we went through a 20-year period where we were trying to fake out nature. Okay. That's how I would say it. And so Crisco is created in the lab, and it's 100% trans fat. And so they have now Crisco is a brand, but it is hydrogenated soybean oil. And so we are not hydrogenating anymore. We know that, and what trans fat is, let me just say quick. So we knew that saturated fat is not the best. Okay, so it can clog our arteries and we need to be careful. So so saturated fat can increase your bad cholesterol. So we created trans fat. And we just took one bond and flipped it. And so it's no longer on the same side. It's on the opposite side, called trans. Cis is on the same side. Trans is on the other. Trans fat. So then what happened was we found out after about 20 years of this that trans fat not only increases our bad cholesterol like saturated fat can, it decreases your good cholesterol. If you know anything about cholesterol, it's hard to get that good cholesterol up.
So
I'm going to just pause for a second and appreciate people being very, what's the right word, Bridget, where you're concerned, you're not totally sure, skeptical, right?
I think they're skeptical and curious. I'm so glad that people are curious. But Chandra, the fact that you're willing to talk about these things and you're not doing this in an emotional accusatory way, you're just saying, hey, from a scientific perspective, this is what it really is.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want to find what could potentially be the cause. So that's what I'm sharing, the two arguments that we're hearing. And the food scientists and dietitians, Dr. Decker spoke out from University of Massachusetts and Dr. Bellary from Ohio State, just two examples of folks. This is their area. This is their where they're currently researching at their universities, and it's just not adding up. Concern about seed oils. So I think the only thing we didn't talk about is maybe smoke point. So
sure.
Yeah. I mean, when you have liquid oils, that is a positive for nutrition. They can oxidize. That basically means rancid. And so, you know, when you store, actually Dr. Decker, he stores all of his oils in the fridge, olive oil too. So if you want to prevent that, it's just simply minimizing how often oxygen is exchanged from the environment. So capping it only goes so far. Put it in the fridge. And when it comes to smoke points, the highest smoke point of any oil to cook with is actually, algae oil, which is really hard to find, but I'm looking over here. Safflower oil is up to 510 degrees Fahrenheit. Refined avocado oil is about 520. So I always know avocado oil as being the highest smoke point, actually. Yeah. It's a spread depending on how it's processed. So 480 to 520, depending on what's still there naturally. Soybean oil is right behind it. And so soybean oil is at about 450 degrees. So it's a good oil to cook with and bake with, which is typically what you're going to find when you see vegetable oil in general on the shelf.
And Chandra, our discussion. Go ahead, Dean. I was going to say our discussion has just been so fast today. We're almost out of time.
I know. We could keep going. We can keep going for another half hour here. Chandra, what would you say is the biggest misnomer that you would like to kind of squash that people still believe to this day about oils?
Right. Okay. So the biggest one about oils, well, I mean, you know, the bottom line about oils is those that are in block form, that are in solid form at room temperature, are the hardest for your veins to handle. Okay, so so when we're attacking oils, be careful, because this is the realm where the dietitians tell us where we want to be. There is an exchange of, you know, beef tallow with oils. And there is an appropriate place for that, but oils are the best choice when it comes to, your cholesterol level and triglycerides.
Don't give up on all those things.
Right.
Chandra, if folks have other questions and they want to visit with you, and I swear to God, you're going to have to come back because this is not going to be a one-day conversation.
Totally.
How would you like people to reach out as an extension specialist for NDSU?
Yes. Okay. So please just Google food systems is probably the best way with NDSU, and you'll find me. I'm the food systems program coordinator, meaning we help people understand the way that their food is produced and processed. I'm not necessarily speaking to producers. I'm speaking to consumers to help understand that. So food systems, Chandra, that's even harder to remember. Find me on the NDSU website.
Oh, NDSU. Thank you so much. Just really appreciate your wealth of knowledge today. And I know that there will be follow-up questions coming from our listeners. And so Dean and I will happily not only traffic those to you, but then make sure that we bring you back on to visit as we have them.
Okay, that's a deal. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Chandra.
Well, yeah, take
thank
care.
You.
Yeah. Well, when we come back, we'll do a quick recap of the weather. We'll take a peek into Easter weekend. I'm sure a lot of people will be traveling across the state. Will weather play an impact with that? And we'll touch on a couple of ag topics as well. More when we come back. And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus on this Monday, April 14th, 1:55 in the afternoon. Quick recap of the weather. We do have some scattered showers throughout the FM area right now, continuing to pop up on radar, moving from northwest to southeast. And we'll be continuing with these through about 4 o'clock, and then they'll start to diminish a little bit. And then eventually skies will clear overnight. Next couple of days look pretty good. We're in the low 50s tomorrow with light winds, and Wednesday the winds pick up a little bit, but we're back up in the 60s with another shot of rain coming in here on Thursday, and a sneak peek into Easter weekend. It's going to be a cool start on Friday. Saturday looks nice. Sunday looks mild, but we could see a chance of rain coming in late in the day on Easter Sunday, probably after mid-late afternoon, coming in from the south. So a little sooner in the southern valley than the northern valley on Easter Sunday. But travel plans across the Dakotas, Minnesota look fine. No snow in the forecast for Easter weekend, so that's good news for any travelers. And Bridget, you've got a Crisco story. I mean, I never thought I'd hear that term again or that. They still sell that? Do they?
Oh, sure.
Do they really? Wow.
Pie crust. So many people like using Crisco for pie crust, or if you're going to buy the John Morrell lard that you'll find at the meat aisle in the grocery store. Actually, this was told to me by my English teacher in high school. And she had run across an older farmer who, unfortunately, through the years had a very limited education and was not able to read. And she remembered coming across him in the grocery store. And he asked for her help. He knew she was a teacher at the school. And he just said, could you tell me what some of these things are? Because he pointed at the Crisco container, which always has pictures of fried chicken on it. And he said, that's not what's in that can. So he didn't know that the picture of the fried chicken was, you know, Crisco cooking it, not what was actually inside the can. So it's a little bit funny, but it's rather unfortunate too, because that just goes to show, you know, some of the things that can be misleading in advertising and marketing. And so we should always do our homework. And as Chandra said, have a little dose of skepticism on the backside, so you do some of your research and understand a little bit better.
I'll tell you, though, that made the best fried chicken. My mom made it.
Still does.
Oh, man. Yeah, it might not be good for you, but it tastes good.
Well, you're not eating it every day.
I know.
Right?
I know. Right.
Again, like we were talking about, as a cook, as someone who cooks at home a lot, I still make sure to move around what I'm using, not only as proteins, but fats. Still a big fan of butter over here. I'm going to say it.
Hey, it's better than margarine, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with having multiple things. There are certain applications where I really like having a canola oil versus and olive oil, et cetera. And I think it's a great way to move around what you're consuming.
Right, exactly. Well, for Bridget, myself, I want to thank everybody for joining us today on Weather and Ag in Focus. Don't go anywhere. The number one rated show in all of America. That's right. It just moved up to number one. The Jay Thomas Show. It's coming up next.